We're about to light up season 3 of Drifter's Sympathy on Feral Audio. Episode 1 is called Dawn of Individuation, which rolls the clock back to right when you decide who you want to be and the kinds of early decisions that, for better or worse, completely mold the rest of the shape of your life. And episode 2 is going to be called Loner Legends, sort of an attempt to define who the underdog really is and their role in history and culture and art. Season 3 drops on October 23rd. This is Emil Amos. Check out Drifter Sympathy on feralaudio.com.
Daddy, what you did before, ain't got nothing for your hoe. Gonna slip it on down to the back down on the slide round. Welcome up into this wind, boy. Welcome up into this wind, boy. Welcome up into my wind, boy. I got in the shim, boy. I got in the shim, boy.
Oh, I almost lost my breath there. Hey, everybody, welcome to Twisting the Wind. That was a fun one. And that was a fun little one to do there. I wish I could take credit for the entire piece of sound that was just laid out. But, you know, I'm just a thief. I'm just a talk-over thief. That's all I am, you know. Talking over, thieving your nights, stealing your blights, relieving you from famine day and night. This is Johnny Pemberton. You're listening to Twisting the Wind, triple stamped, double overlapped, one circle, one play, one cut. That's how we're doing it today. We have a special guest in the studio right now. His name is Flavor Tape, and he is a mixer. Did you think? Did you think there was actually somebody in here besides me? Did you know that I was making it up? Something that a lot of actors do on set is do weird little songs about everything that's happening. Oh, we're gonna go through the door right now. Oh, I'm walking to him. Oh, I love drinking this water. It's so good because it's cold. Ooh. That's a very annoying thing that goes on Not that you need to be aware of that or anything. It's just something I thought I would share with you, because I have to deal with it sometimes on a regular basis, not on a regular basis. Because it said sometimes. So can something be sometimes and be on a regular basis? I guess so, right? It's alternatingly alternate. Maybe that's what it is. Either way, you're listening to Twisting the Wind here on the Feral Audio Network here with Johnny Pemberton, courtesy of Feral Audio, which is the podcast collective that Broadband Blasts this entire, I guess you could call it it's a hi-fi, it's a low fidelity high, it's a high quality, low definition, I don't know, it's a snow definition. It's a blow reminiscence. It's basically a cloying rendition of a master's standing up kitchen. Some people are doing these things now. They're doing a sitting down kitchen. I don't know if you've seen this. It's a cross-legged idea that's been combined with a sort of a retro Japanese prototypical tanto bandwidth style, where you're sitting cross-legged, but you've got these little cup holes for the balls of your heel. It's the ball of your heel, the ball of your ankle. You know that side part of your ankle with like the bone, it sticks out. It's like, wow, I wish this ground wasn't so hard, but it's poured concrete and we all work together at the store. We're having a team meeting right now. And the team meeting, you know, we all got to sit around cross-legged because that's what Janice says. And then Jumbo is going to come in here and really lay it down. But so you're doing that cross-legged thing and you know, you got the shoes where maybe it's tilting up the ankle because of the thickness of the Nike sole, or maybe it's not. Maybe it's an Adidas. Maybe either way, it's creating an angle that's driving that side buckle of the ankle into the poured concrete as you wait for this team meeting at your work. Because you know you got to have the team meeting. You got to sit cross-legged because that's how you pay attention these days. So you're doing that, and you get that side boy in there. And that's how the floor kitchen was born. It's, like I said, a proto-Japanese thing because they do a lot of floor stuff. They're older culture. They're like, hey, man, maybe these chairs are just too much. So they're like, let's do a floor thing. Let's pretend this wood is actually soft. Did you ever do that? Pretend wood is soft, because it's not as soft as... It's softer than metal, so it is soft. It's soft. It's not as soft as maybe a cloth that's got a stuffing in it of Excelsior, which, you know, that girl, the bad seed, did burn the Excelsior. That old Robin was just trying to lay down on some of this Excelsior.
Something you should know. I'm just trying to lay down on this Excelsior. That's all I want to do, is to lay down by the furnace on the Excelsior. What is Excelsior? Why, it's just stuff you'd use to pack an old shipping crate back in the days when people would ship things in shipping crates. By the dawn's early light, when we found our first fight, by the candlelit hair, by McDonald's in the stair. Front yard, then the sun on the grass started smoking some hash or grass or das. Then poop came out
outside, took a shit on daddy's lap. Oh,
honestly, I don't remember. I know I'm supposed to sing the Star Spangled Jammer for you, but I really don't know if it just repeats or it has an ending.
A sick kitchen, yo. So thank you so much for being here and Twisting the Wind. It's a real special episode. They all are. They always have been. There's never not been a special episode. I don't know if you can tell by the tone of my voice. I've been working on this way of speaking. I've been cultivating a technique. It's a culture. There's a microbiome inside my body that there's still a little bit something left that hasn't been blasted away by the Cipro that I take or the amoxicillin or the other doxycycline or all the other crap to keep the crap from crapping out when I want to crap. But that's what's going on. There's like a bunch of bacteria coating all of our bodies all the time, and they're part of the team, okay? So every time you do something, you didn't do it. You didn't do anything because you're not really you. You're just a collection. You're just a shit factory. And I say that in the nicest way. I think really we're just all shit factories. And that's your job. You eat the food and you produce the shit. And everyone's shit's different, but it's all shit. And as long as you're producing shit, you're doing your job as a human. Just keep making that shit. And then everything else you do is just, it's just extra. It's like a little extra pudding that's not poop. It's like what do you do when you're not working? Oh, I'm a musician. Oh, I'm an actor. Oh, I'm a dancer. Oh, I'm a yoga teacher. Oh, I'm a doctor. Oh, I'm unemployed. That's what you do, but you're not an employee because you're always working. You're working in the shit factory. You are your own job. We all are. We're just part of the shit factory. And your shit factory is literally a factory. So don't worry about anything because you're just, as long as you're shitting, everything's okay because you can do whatever you want because you're just a shit factory. We're all just human solo shit factories. That's we employ lots of things that do the shitting and then just keep making the shit, and whatever else you do is just extra. It just adds to the nature of your shit factory. Like, oh, is that a shit factory? Yeah, he's also a singer in a band. Yeah, don't try too hard because if you strain, you'll break your factory. Okay, so here you are. I'm gonna make a little note right now, drop in a little bloop, like a sound here, just to sort of signify the dignification of this ending of this introduction. Star Spangled Banner was brought to you by Francis Scott Key, the only guy who ever did that, even though he probably stole it and no one really cares or knows. Yes, this is Twisting the Wind with Johnny Pemberton you're listening to right now. It's been a little bit since an episode has been out because I've been doing a lot of things, okay? I've been international, I've been all over the place, I've been busy, I've been guest starring. It's good, it feels good. I've got a lot of... Listen... I've got some episodes that are in the can. I was going to say in the pipe. I kind of like the pipe better because in the can implies it's like a different thing. But I've got a bunch of loaded pipes here. And two of them are with one of them is with a master gardener, and one of them is with two master gardeners, a couple. Pardon me. And they are excellente. I've been holding on to them for a little bit because I know springtime is coming for the rest of the world.
Hey, man, guess what? Actually, one of those episodes you just mentioned, the Master Gardener one with Al Renner, you're going to listen to it right now because you took so goddamn long in putting out a new episode that now it's pertinent because it's springtime. Spring has come, winter has abated, and spring has come in the time you've been thinking about what to do.
It's me. It's your conscience. Johnny, it's me. Johnny, me. It's you.
It's Johnny. Johnny. Johnny, it's you. It's me. You. Get back on the horse.
But springtime is about to lay down hard. And I want you to be able to be invigorated by this garden talk. So I kind of held off on putting them out. So I'm going to put those out real soon. I got some good ones. Oh, my God. I recorded with some foreigners with beautiful, interesting vocal tones. And it's just real good. It's just real happy to be here presenting these sort of diverse collections of recordings. That's what this is. Just a little recording collective, really. Okay. So I want you to thank yourself for chilling out with your Ship Factory. I want you to, I want you. I'm just talking about wants and needs and haves and I could use a couple needs here, you know. Please rate and review the podcast and subscribe. Do all those three things. You can do them all at the same time on iTunes. iTunes. Are you looking for a tune? Have you got a computer? iTunes. Tune in, drop out, drop in, and tune up. Check it out. Rate, review, subscribe. Also, I suggest you fucking donate to the podcast if you're one of those people who's like, I've listened to every episode 6 times. I love it. It's my favorite thing. Then give me a little money because I'm basically recording a fucking album here almost every week. A fucking album that you give me. I'm giving to you for free. And I'm going to keep giving to you free. I have no problem giving to you for free. I really don't. I don't have a problem giving it to you for free. But I have a problem if you have a problem with getting it for free when you're like, oh, I shouldn't get it for free. So there you go. Also, you should buy a t-shirt. I have a few left. And these are the first, like I said, these are the first and only of this limited edition of Twisting the Wind shirts. I will some point make another shirt. I will do. But right now, there's nothing loaded in the pipe for a second t-shirt cannon blast. T-shirt cannons are the best. They really are, especially the glitter, all that stuff. Just a good thing. So that's the case, and you should get on it now. There's very few left. I think our counter on the site is not reflecting of the current stock, just because we're kind of lo-fi in that sense, but nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. So go ahead and touch down on a Delta Dream and get that Twisting the Wind limited edition shirt. Otherwise, keep abreast of my calendar at johnnypemberton.com and maybe coming towards a zone near you. Currently nothing planned. Well, there's some stuff planned, but I don't want to spread the bulk before. I don't want to spread the sprouted grain until I intend to brew. Does that make sense? Hey, you brewers out there? Yeah, go ahead. Send me some of your stuff. I'll love it. P.O. Box, blah, 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 ding dong, wish tips. Ha, it's twistingthewind@gmail.com.
It's twistingthewind@gmail.com.
There was only three.
Okay, so not that
steep
bad
here for that.
You're right.
We're on a hillside.
And this is is you, Al Renner, who I'm speaking with.
Yes, that's
and me. Who else was involved with the starting of the garden then?
From the canyon at that time, Lydia Moreno, who lives right down the street.
Okay.
Mrs. Brown is now gone. She was a real powerful force. Mrs. Alicia Brown, and she lived just down the street.
Mm-hmm.
I lived just up the street, past the school, about a half of a block at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. And then we got the blessings of in those days, it was Council Member Reyes.
Okay.
For this area.
Right.
And then we worked with the Council Member Garcetti's office.
Right.
In the local area.
And so that's how it got started. So you were involved in this type of things, like agriculture and community gardening before that?
No, not really, not really, but yes, really, when you go all the way back to my growing up in Illinois on
okay.
a farm, you know, yes, that was in my roots.
Right.
It was just when I left home, I told my parents, I'll never be a farmer again.
Right. Yeah, a bleeping farmer. You can yeah. you feel free to not bleep if you don't want to bleep.
Yeah.
So that was, where in Illinois is that?
It's 100 miles west of Chicago.
Okay.
In and around near DeKalb, Northern Illinois
okay.
University.
Yeah, I have some friends who still live in that near there.
Yeah.
So.
I have family there, yeah.
Right. So you got out of the, what kind of farm did you grow up on?
It was about 600 acres.
It wow, it's a big one.
It was a family farm. And I was fortunate enough to be, because the kids in the family all
right.
stayed on the farms.
How many kids?
In ours there was four of
four.
Us
that's
kids.
A pretty small amount for a farm family.
Yeah. Well, but Grandpa and Grandma had lots of others.
Okay.
So there was no
yeah.
no shortage of that.
Right.
And I got to really grow up my first maybe informative years of, you know, 3 to 7
right.
on a farm that plowed with horses.
Oh, wow.
And did everything the old-fashioned way.
Was that intentional, or was that sort of just that's how they've been doing it and they didn't see the need to update?
My uncles and my dad,
right.
who ran the farms, no, they had tractors, and Grandpa wouldn't have one of those
hand-angled
machines on his 40 acres.
Okay.
Sort of what he had.
Got it.
They let him. And yes, and I really grew up there having to do the manure piles and
wow.
cleaning the stables and saving everything. So it all makes sense to me here.
The permaculture aspect.
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything makes sense to me.
But then you left there at, how old were you when you left?
18.
18, okay, as soon as you could.
18, as soon as I could.
Did you join up in the Army or do anything like crazy like that?
Absolutely not.
Okay. I have to ask.
I went to some private education
right.
and just fell into a really good job.
Right.
So I didn't even bother to go back to real school, really.
Right.
And... yes, and then I got drafted, of course, for
you
the
did.
Vietnam War, and I think I got drafted in 63.
Can you turn the mic towards you a little more? Great.
Yeah, I got drafted in 1963.
So what wave of the war was that at that point, do you remember?
Heavy duty.
Okay.
Yeah, it was heavy duty.
So did you see, were you deployed?
I was a general's aide.
Okay.
So not really.
But you were.
But I was active, yeah.
Were you scared about that being a thing that would happen? You would get deployed to, like, be a GI?
Well, my brother was a CB.
Okay. What's a CB?
A construction battalion
okay.
in the Navy. And so he was under fire. I
right.
was very familiar with it. I wasn't pampered or protected, but I was here in the States.
Okay.
I didn't have to leave.
Did you, would it enter your mind about trying to, would you ever think about not being drafted or like going to Canada or anything like that or being
oh,
a conscientious?
I came home and demonstrated, yes.
You did, okay.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Got handcuffed and hung
really?
Off of the street at Hollywood and Highland.
Really? Wow. So what, that was like 19, when was that? Before
that
your...
would have been in 1960s, the late 60s.
Okay, so after you came back.
Oh, yeah.
Or after you were finished.
After, I believed in my service.
Right, okay.
I did. I just didn't believe in the war.
Right. Yeah, the people forget that you can do both. You can...
I tried.
Right. So you were... So you moved to California... At that point?
I came back. I actually came out here in 1961.
Okay.
I was sent out on a reporter. I worked for the press at the time.
Okay.
And I came out, and they sent me out here. I stayed out here and was drafted and had to go back to Illinois.
Okay.
But when I got out, I told them, you either transfer me or I leave. And
right.
I came.
So that was with a paper or something, or what was the?
It was with Western Union.
Oh wow! Okay.
Yeah, it was with Western Union and Associated Press. I mean, I worked with all of whoever was in the who was ever in, at that time needed this cent. We got it.
So you were writing. Were you writing at that point? Or doing?
I was actually coding it and, you know, putting it on the tape and then sending it through. That's what I did.
What does that mean exactly? Is that like a? That's
sort
of
like a big old typewriter.
Okay.
You know, and it punched holes in tapes.
So it's like a primitive computer in a sort.
You know,
very primitive. Very primitive. Very primitive. So that brought you out here, and you've been here ever since then.
Yes.
The Los Angeles area.
Mm-hmm. I worked in the aerospace industry then.
Really?
Off and on for... I had my heart attack in 1989, so off and on from the early 70s. I did a lot of things because I'm just a radical. I'm a social progressive.
Right.
They used to call us radical.
Yeah, now it's
I'm social progressive.
It's harder to be radical now.
Yeah, I can't be as radical as I used to be,
right.
Of course.
So you were out here, you were working in the aerospace industry, but you're also, so you were socially progressive radical at the time.
Yes.
Is there sort of, in your mind, is there any sort of anything contradictory in that at all?
No.
Not at all?
No.
So when you were working, what did you do with the aerospace industry?
I was in quality control.
Okay.
And I inspected, and my department inspected parts and things like that that were going to be used in...
Right.
It was, the title is High Rel Space Flight Hardware. High Reliability Space Flight Hardware. I think it was Military Specs 104 and 105.
Okay.
I mean, it was ingrained in your head.
Yeah, I'm sure you can't possibly forget those things because it...
It was pretty radical at times.
Got it. That was down in Redondo Beach area or something? Or
actually, I worked out of Pasadena for the Jet Propulsion Laboratories a great deal of the time on contracts that were... dealing at the lab.
Yeah. Isn't that like Northrop Grumman or something is there? Or who else is there?
Well, see, I was with Boeing. And I was with Electro-Optical Systems, which was basically Xerox, who they changed, McDonnell Douglas, Litton Industries.
There's a lot of
everybody
them.
Was up there. The major on the moon flight, the Bendix was the major, the major thing. And
what is that?
Bendix is a corporation that isn't even around.
Oh, okay, right yeah, that sounds familiar.
They were the major
but...
contractor at that time,
right?
And I got to work on that with two instruments that went to the moon. It was fun.
Oh wow,
it was a great
that's
time.
Cool.
It was a great time.
And so you're doing that, and you're also living in Los Angeles, being an Illinois farm kid at the same time. So it's like,
yes,
I'm sure it was a. I mean, it's a crazy time of sorts, right?
Actually, it was a wonderful time.
Right.
It was...
wonderfully crazy.
I mean, the 60s were wonderful.
Right.
And I lived through a musical revolution, and I was trained classically, and so...
Really? What do you play? What instrument?
The piano. I play for my own personal...
Right.
Nobody else's. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's how it should be, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I did a lot of those things. I did a lot of firsts. And didn't always do what I should have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like, now in my 70s, and, you know, I should have done a little more work and saving, which I didn't.
So that's your regret for that period, is not saving enough money, you feel like?
Well, my next door neighbor was a professor at USC named Timothy Leary.
Ha ha! You know what? This is so funny. When I came here, I told a good friend of mine I was going to be interviewing you, and I think I was actually maybe driving on the 110, but going up the overpass, and I was saying, I have a feeling that Al is going to be telling me something. I'm not kidding. I really said, I bet he knew Timothy Leary back in the 60s. And I just, I can't believe that. I'm sorry. I'm just like having a real moment here because I really said that. Not that far.
Away.
And I said it in the car, and I was like, I bet Al like was friends with Timothy Leary or something like that. He's got some sort of crazy story about that. And lo and behold, wow, that's incredible. Tell me, your roommate was Timothy Leary? Is that what you said?
No,
your neighbor.
Timothy and his wife lived right next door.
Okay.
In Laguna Beach.
Got it.
And but part of the mantra was tune in, turn on, and drop out.
Right.
The dropout, both Timothy and I agreed later, was not really the best thing we could have done.
Right, yeah.
But we did it.
Or to a degree to drop out. Yeah.
Right. It was something, and it was in a time.
So. Yeah. It was a very special time that was sort of insulated by other things. Yeah.
And I remained friends with Timothy right till he died.
Okay. So you were living next to him at that time, but that's when he was... Was that when he was
a professor, a young professor from Harvard teaching at USC.
Right. So did you help him partake? Did you like partake in any of his studies at all?
Absolutely.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. I can't lie. But you can. Well, it was a time.
Yeah, well, of course.
Lots of people will do things in their youth that they will never do again.
Right. So that's some of like the first LSD that was ever produced, right?
It was pure.
It was pure, right, okay.
And we probably abused.
Right.
But it was pure, but it was legal.
So what was that like? Do you remember the first time you took LSD?
Yes.
So is that an experience? Because previous to that, had you ever taken any psychedelic drugs?
No.
So that must be something, that was something where... Because I've taken a fair amount of psychedelic drugs, but taking them, it was either taking them with people who already had, or there's all this literature out there to describe what it was like, and people who've done it, all these different things you have to go on when you're taking it. So it's not the same, I feel like, because you were taking it. This is some of the first acid ever ingested by humans, and you've never taken anything psychedelic before. Did you have any expectations at all?
No.
Not at all?
No, none at all. I didn't know. Timothy told us we didn't have a really good time.
Okay, so how he had done it before, like how long before you first tried it, had Timothy first tried the drug?
I have no idea.
But not that far in the future, not in the past, actually,
oh,
right?
No.
It was pretty recent.
No, we were this pretty much the same age. He was a little older than me.
Okay. So you when you first tried it, it was an experience where... like, do you feel like it was did it alter you permanently, or do you feel like it was some sort of a change in your brain that opened you up to different things that you had never thought about before or since?
Yes, I would have to say that. And I'm very fortunate in the fact that I probably, what I did would be considered abuse, okay?
Okay.
And I never, ever had a bad time.
Okay, that's pretty good. That's pretty lucky.
Exactly, because I had friends that just had... Now, I did some strange things.
Right.
Some very strange things, but never had a bad time, and I don't really regret... no, in fact, it makes me laugh when I think about it. And well, I did some things that I didn't like.
What made you laugh just now when you laughed thinking about not regretting anything? Because there was a little pause there.
Because you were talking about the first time.
Right, first time.
It was just... My, bless her heart, my secretary at the time had said, Al, this is what you do.
Okay? Right.
And it was a quarter of a tab.
Okay.
Well, the friends that I was going to do it with, they said, oh, no, won't get anything, blah, blah, blah. They had already experienced.
They said nothing will happen.
Nothing would happen if I just only did that.
Right.
And so we all did one.
Not a quarter, did one.
Not a quarter.
Did one. So I did four times what you were initially instructed to do.
And then they, meaning my friends, decided they were going to go to Newport. Beach.
Okay.
I'm not going anywhere because it's new. I don't know what's going to happen.
Right, you want to stay put.
When it came on, my friends were in Newport Beach, and I think that they simultaneously, because they all said the same thing, we just looked at each other and said, oh my God, we left Al home alone.
Alone, taking acid for the first time.
Al had a great time.
Not a great time.
The Moody Blues, I think I knew every Moody Blues song in the world by the end of that night.
So you just basically stayed home and listened to music.
I got out and walked around through the apartment complex. It was very strange.
This is in the beach area?
Yeah.
Okay.
And went right back in.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, because you don't really need
I
a whole lot.
I never told anybody those stories.
Well, now they've been told. They should have been told. That's a good story to hear.
And so, it was a good time for me.
Right. So was that like on a weekend or something like that?
Oh, no. I lived right next door.
Oh, right next door to what?
Timothy Leary. And oh, no, but, it was many times.
But this first time, yeah. So you had a job. You were working normal hours, so to speak?
At that time, I was in the stock brokerage industry.
The stockbroker?
I'd gotten mad at the aerospace people.
Wow.
And decided I was going to be a broker.
Okay, so you were working as a broker this time when you first did acid.
Yeah.
So do you feel like after that first time, like what were your, when you were, when you just, once you started coming down and it started wearing off, was there, what did you, I mean, besides exhaustion, were there like thoughts about, I guess just any sort of change in perspective or something that, that you felt like was different that had never been different before?
Well, I'm sure there were lots.
Right.
Oftentimes, I can remember saying, wow, this is a great idea. I'm going to write it down.
Right.
And I would go get a pen and a pencil and write it down. I just couldn't read it. Then when I went back to read, I didn't know what I had written. And so, yeah, I gave up trying to do certain things.
Okay, so you gave up trying to use it as like a...
Well, I was trying to capture some times. And I have them in my head.
Right.
You have some of those times in your head.
Right.
They won't go away, so...
And some of that stuff just doesn't translate. It's like a different plane of existence, kind of.
Totally.
Yeah, so if you try to write it down, you look at it later, like, well, that's not the same language as I heard it in my head, so...
And I oftentimes think about it, but I think if ever, well, I'm in my middle 70s,
okay,
so I'm probably not going to be doing too many psychedelic drugs again in my life.
Yeah.
I just think mushrooms would be wonderful, and we did peyote in the days when I was around, so, I mean, I know that. And I know mushrooms, but I think the mushrooms must be very good.
Right. So did you take mushrooms after, you take an LSD a good deal before you first took mushrooms?
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I wasn't afraid of any drug.
Okay. Yeah, because that must have been a pretty intense experience, taking such a large amount for the first time.
Oh, my goodness. We didn't know we were taking large amounts.
Right.
But it turned out to be large amounts.
Large amounts of pure acid from Timothy Leary. So is there anything else that you guys got into in that time frame? Like, what was
No, and later on, Timothy liked nitrous oxide.
Right, okay.
Also,
right, that nitrous is...
We're alike.
So you're just really experimenting with everything at the time, and
yes, yeah,
that's so interesting. So did any of that experimentation with those types of psychedelics lead you into being interested in working with permaculture or gardening aspects? I feel like there's in my mind there's sort of a link. You know what I mean?
Well, actually, I have to give it a little thought there, but since we already know the beginnings of what I was doing in the 60s,
right?
No, I eventually said the only drug that I was going to do would be pot.
Right.
I did experiment with many others and so forth and so on. Found them not to be worthy of the money, my body, many of those things, just not worthy of me using or doing. And then I tried to help with legalizing pot.
Right.
Oh, yeah, 1968.
Okay, yeah. It's come a long way.
It certainly has. It's taken longer than I thought.
Right.
But it's working, and I think that the Colorado people have shown
right.
that just straight out it's going to work.
Yeah, it's a slow march.
It's a new form of revenue, and
right.
we should be looking for new forms of revenue, not taxing heavily the old revenue,
right.
the old things we do. We need new, and that's a new product.
A new old product.
It's a new old product, yes indeed. I can tell you the stories about that too, because I've done the study in history on it.
Well, let's pause real quick. I'm gonna change these batteries out, and then we can hear that story. You're listening to Twisting the Wind on the Feral Audio Network. Please do all kinds of good stuff. Okay, bye. Good job. This is a too much chatter. The entire point is too much chatter. So we were talking about marijuana legalization and the product and revenue and stuff, and you were saying how you have some things to say about that initial movement and stuff.
Well, the story, that it's a bit of a fun story also. Mm-hmm. I think in my memory, my recollection, the first time we tried to do anything towards the legalization, we went to the Beverly Hills City Council and okay. asked them to legalize it. And of course, they said no.
Why'd you go there specifically?
Because they're a very progressive city.
Okay. They're, it's weird to think about that now. In my mind, it's not. Beverly Hills, like, I think about, like, I think rich people who want to keep their money and will do it at all costs. That's my mind, that is what it is now. Mm, but I suppose it's...
But I'm a poor people, and I like to keep my money at right. all costs, too. So I have some sort of a... No, but they were, as far as taking care of their city,
yeah.
those kind of things, they were quite progressive for the age.
Right.
And one of my friends was Jewish, and he wanted to do it for a bunch of Jewish people, and right. that's why we went to Beverly Hills.
Right.
But that was the real start. And his name was Jack Herrera. He died not
Jack Herrera. Jeez. Well, Jack Herrera is, I mean, he's...
He's a legend.
Right.
I and Jack were friends for years.
Okay.
I have... You know the book that he has written?
I do. I haven't read it, but I know of it, yeah.
When we wrote the first manuscript, I won't tell you how the typewriters, we didn't even have...
Right.
We didn't even have, what are they, did they call them?
Teletype?
word processors.
Okay, right.
We didn't, they were just coming on for the very...
It was typewriters.
But we just used typewriters. And we did it, and it was called Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Marijuana, But the Government Refused to Tell You. Okay. And Jack insisted on that title. And eventually, we found a place in Oregon.
Okay.
The Free Press in Oregon ran the first edition of that.
This is something you guys co-authored?
Well, I didn't co-author.
Oh, okay.
I just worked with him. I edited.
Okay.
That was. But I worked with Jack. Oh, we had a lot of fun. We worked for years together.
So what year is this approximately?
This is the late 1960s,
okay.
Early 70s. Probably I got out of that movement somewhere after 72, 78, I think, was my last involvement.
Got it.
In the movement, right.
Okay. And so you helped him edit that initial, like the first marijuana paper, to some extent.
It was part of the CMI papers.
Right.
And I think I probably am one of the only people, except for maybe the Free Press, who still has that
copy.
Wow,
that's incredible. Yeah.
Then the book was redone,
mm-hmm.
and Jack wrote all across the whole front page for me.
Oh, cool.
And when this third edition came around, Jack signed it for me again.
Great.
I'd like to see those in a museum somewhere.
They should be. And, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Under some glass.
I just think that they're, yeah, and I have some of his earlier work that he did with other artists where he was drawing, and but it was always in the vein of what that was headed for. Yeah.
So at that time when you were involved in that marijuana movement, were you interested in agriculture, like growing or anything like that at all, or no?
I lived in Pomona for a while okay. at the time on 10 acres. Yes, indeed.
Okay.
I did some bad things in that time.
Well, bad is a relative term, isn't it? Especially if we're talking about growing a plant.
I probably wouldn't go to prison today
right.
for what it was then.
But you would have back then. It would have been a pretty big deal. You went to prison. Wow. For growing marijuana.
And some other things. So.
Okay. Wait, so you went to, how did that go down?
It was just a bad scene.
You were cultivating a significant amount of cannabis.
I have 10 acres.
Okay.
And I knew how to hybrid and
jeez.
That was the, I just was in the wrong place at the wrong time. But when you are in an underground industry, you don't always know who you're involved or who you're talking
yeah.
with even then. And the people that my friends were talking to were undercover cops.
Wow.
And I'm there. So
this, what year is this approximately?
It happened in 1974.
So 1974, did you move to Pomona for that purpose?
No, I moved to Pomona because it was a beautiful, wonderful old house built in 1921
wow.
or something like that, and it was added on to
okay.
had a whole history. It was just wonderful old house.
Right, and that was out in sort of the farm country.
It was at that time strawberry fields
wow.
and bean fields. I had the Southern California Conference at my place in Pomona and had 378 people come down
right.
and never parked a car on the street.
Wow. Well, this is a conference for what exactly?
It was for the 1978 attempt at putting marijuana on the initiative.
So this is like an early version of Normal? Or is this Normal? Was Normal around then?
Oh, Normal was there. I
okay.
was on the board.
Got it.
California.
So at that same time, were you also growing?
Yes, that's
wow.
partly. Yes.
So what got you into that? Because that's a big step to start to go from aerospace and being a stockbroker to growing, cultivating a cash crop of sorts.
Right. Well, in those days, it would have been considered for a cash crop and everything. And my mind, I don't believe, was ready to be a good farmer.
Okay.
Or to be a fair farmer.
What do you mean by a fair farmer?
Some people are growing things and they don't care how they rape the land.
Okay, right.
And raping of the land is a really important thing for
right.
me. And I got hired in, I'd had a heart attack, like I said. And I decided I wasn't going to go back into the aerospace industry.
So this was in the late 60s, early 70s?
No, this was in 1989.
Okay, that's when you had a heart attack.
That's when I had my heart attack. And I decided I just wasn't going to go back. And I did not know what I was going to do. Well, here's another one of those stories.
Right.
My life has been that. So that you understand, it's... I don't want to tell you too much about the drug thing, but
right. Understand.
But otherwise, I was recovering in 1994 yet from my heart attack. Not doing well. We lived in Los Feliz.
Okay.
Just up off of Sunset Boulevard.
Right.
And every morning I walked with my cane down Sunset, past Santa Monica, right there at Sunset Junction.
Right.
Over to Fountain or whatever it is. I mean, Hyperion and back up to where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched these kids. And they, every day that I walked, I would see them. And they dug holes and they moved these enormous rocks. And they had lumber and things stacked all over the place. And they just didn't seem to accomplish anything. And I said, hey, what are you guys doing?
Mm-hmm.
And I kid you not, the little guy who answered must have been 12, 14 years old. And if he could have pulled his pants down any further, he would have, both hands. And
right.
he said, we're building a community garden. Why?
Wow.
And that was my introduction to community gardens.
That's cool.
Actually, I decided to go volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you guys are just wasting too much time. And, well, there was a whole other thing. I told him, well, didn't they think they were doing it kind of hard? And the kid said, challenging me.
Right.
If you think you can do a better job, why don't you come and show us? Huh? I remember the words, never forgot them.
Yeah.
And I was stunned, and I did what any other, and I say blonde, blue-eyed, white boy would do, meaning I think of myself on the level of people at that time, and I said, oh, I'm sick, I'm this,
mm-hmm.
and the little guy stopped me, and a young boy was in his place, and he said, and I get emotional about it. He said, that's all right, mister. We know we're throwaway kids. I was just devastated.
Right.
How could you feel that way at 12 or 14 when I looked and thought, what did I feel like? It bothered me immensely.
Okay.
And went home, and my partner of 35 years said, look, go volunteer. Maybe you need to help them.
Mm-hmm.
It's bothering you. That's how I got into community gardening.
Wow, that's a great story.
I found out they were being punished, so here comes...
Oh, they're being punished, the work they're doing.
They weren't getting anything done, and here comes this radical who says, oh, all right, we'll build them their bleeping gardens.
Right.
And we did. And had a totally successful summer program.
Wow.
I don't think I ever enjoyed working with teenagers before. And it launched me on this. When the program ended, I was devastated. I lost my kids.
Yeah, because it was so consuming. It was such a great activity, and everything about it was like
and
fulfilling.
Their
right?
response was so overwhelming that you just can't believe what it. Well, it changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't walk with a cane anymore.
Right.
I'm different. They made me a different person.
Wow, and that was and after all these other things had happened, and it was something where...
So now was the time for me to go to farm, and I got hired by a homeless thing to what? Help them grow vegetables in a homeless camp encampment.
Right, and that's where we are right now.
And and so this is basically one of the places that it started.
Wow.
Right here.
And so that's what could have got you back in. So it was almost like everything had been leading up to that to some extent.
Oh, I think that life does that.
Yeah.
I'm old enough to see that life does that. And sometimes the curve is so sharp, it's a right angle.
Right.
And other times it's a nice, gentle thing. Sometimes the hill is really hard to go up.
Right.
But when you go up a really hard hill, it's usually going to be a nice ride down the other side.
Right. Yeah, I always think about that. People always say it's all downhill from here. And it always means, like, two things, you know? I always think, well, it's good and bad. It's good it's downhill, but it's also bad. It's,
you
it's
know,
such a
you
perspective thing.
You know you're going
to
reach a bottom.
Right, at some point.
Well, it begins to, you have to look at it total, life in total. And a lot of, and young people, I'm sorry, you know, you're a bit younger than me. But
right.
sometimes you don't have that experience.
Oh, yeah.
That really can be... Things can be profound, and you don't even intend to say things that are profound.
Right. Yeah, experience is underrated.
Yeah.
Significantly. I feel like there's a lot, especially with things of the Hollywood nature. Everything, age is attached
Thank
to everything.
God, I never wanted to be in the industry.
Yeah.
You know, we all call it the industry.
The industry. The stree.
Yeah. And
right.
I just never wanted to be, and I have many friends that did. I have several friends who made it.
Really?
Yeah. Well, they live up there in the hills in
right.
big houses.
So these people who were around at that same time in the late 60s, you guys were all hanging out with?
Yes, and I can't say who they were.
All right. Okay. Yeah, okay. Off the record.
Off the record,
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting, though. That's so interesting how
Yes, remember
works
the
out.
Night that... you don't remember the night, but one night the Hollywood sign changed to Hollyweed?
Yes. Okay, so you maybe
I'm still one of the people that are alive that was involved with that.
Wow, that's a lot of work.
Oh, like I said, life was very, very good to me. I really have no complaints. Even the downsides were learning experiences and to teach me how to be better in the next part of what my life was going to be.
Right. Yeah, everything leads up to the point where you are.
And I'm hoping that it continues for a while, you know, that leading, because I want to change this into, it is changing into, if I'm fortunate, I will have Homeboy Industries.
Okay, that's great.
Here with me.
Yeah.
I will have the Women's Homeless Center from downtown here with me. And I'm working on a social justice group in Inglewood that will be with me.
Okay.
All of these would be leased to restaurants. Eventually,
all right. Mm-hmm.
My kids go to school down there where we came up. They graduate to up here to do work. And the most important part is... When I was in prison, they did not do anything to make you not come back.
Okay.
They just did nothing. And that's still the mentality in the prison.
Yeah.
And when I got out, I was so glad to get out. But...
How long were you there for?
Too long.
Like long?
Yeah.
I guess any length of time is too long.
It was
long.
A little
right.
over a year.
Well, that's...
It was too
yeah.
long. I wasn't there the whole time. It was sort of interesting. They said, we'll teach this white boy a lesson. And right. I went sent to San Quentin, and then I went to Soledad, and then I came back to serve the final 6 months of my time in a local jail.
Okay.
And so, again, that doesn't happen to state prisoners very often. I can tell you the story of how that happened when I didn't have anything to do with it.
Right.
So my life has been guarded and guided, and I feel I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, whether anybody else thinks so or not.
That's all you can hope for, I suppose.
And
if I'm doing
what I like, I never work a day.
Right.
I never work, and I don't. I come here, and I will put in labor, but I didn't work.
Right.
I go home and I sleep like a baby.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing.
Right.
Because old people don't sleep.
Yeah, that's right. They don't really sleep that well,
but
do they?
If we did some of the things that we really liked, we would. But the thing of it is, I want to teach the groups that are coming to work with me, if they are not an ex, I don't want them.
What do you mean, not an ex?
If they are not an ex-convict, I don't want them.
Really?
And I, same thing with the ladies. I want them arrested, and they're having a hard time. I want those that struggle to come.
Right.
Why would I want that? Because experience tells us from other programs around the United States, not mine, not my idea. This might be my idea, but it's not my idea. Recidivism rate in the prison systems of the United States, except for one state, is 78%.
It's pretty high.
If I have been in prison 78% of the time, I'm going to go back.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad. When you take these prisoners and you put their hands in the soil and they... I have a Get Dirty shirt on under here. And they get dirty... Guess what you think the percentage would be?
Less. I don't know how much less, but...
22%.
Wow.
22%. One state. Now, I don't have a lot to say good about the attitudes of the state of North Carolina.
Okay.
But the one thing they didn't do was they didn't take out their farming system. And going back and checking their recidivism rates, the guys that were in the farming system didn't go back to prison. Only...
Right.
26% of the time.
Wow. Because it generates this magical self-worth, doesn't it?
That's why. And my teaching to the women, I've already done this. I've been teaching out at Pitches in the prison out there.
Okay.
And I've had women. The women, I teach them about the value of this food for your family.
Mm-hmm.
You have to feed your family. Believe me, if you can grow lettuce that's better than what you can do in the store, why don't you do that? I can't teach that to men. With men, I have to teach them, look, this is an agriculture thing. You can actually make money. But you have to know how.
Right.
And you're going to have to learn and study, because there's a lot of rules that you have to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't find... I have a waiting list in Pitches to get onto my crew to go out and work in the garden. Now, that's to get out and go to work in the garden. But now, to get onto that list, you have to go through my class in the school. And I still have this waiting list. So everybody that goes through the class wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
We have the best times. I made them count worms one day. Well, we have this wonderful worm farm. They bring their stuff in. We feed it. We know we... How many do we have? We have no idea. So we weighed out a pound of worms.
Right.
And I gave each of them a pile, and we had to count the worms that were in that pound, and we added it up, and we figured out we had 1,000,000 worms in there.
Jeez.
They thought they had cracked the code of theory of relativity.
Yeah, because that would be pretty incredible to find out through the math that you have 1,000,000 worms.
I mean, they weren't going to touch them.
Right.
They weren't going to touch them, but we had figured it out.
Right.
And eventually, they all counted their worms.
Wow.
So, to me, that is what I'm here to do. I'm doing... I don't call it even inspiration. It's, to me, it's not inspiring. It's what we should be doing.
Yeah, it's basic.
What we should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in an apartment, you should be growing cherry tomatoes. You should be growing fava beans. They grow well in plants, and if you don't want to look at your neighbors, they grow really nice and high.
They do, yeah, the fava beans.
And you can eat them.
Mm-hmm.
Tree collards make wonderful background plants.
They do.
For anything at an apartment.
Those are the those are like those brassica, right? Those are
they're edible. That's
right.
A collard.
Yeah.
And
those are collards.
Yeah.
I always thought those were overgrown Brussels sprouts.
Everybody does, but
okay.
that's a collard.
I didn't know that.
It never has a bloom, never has a fruit. It has leaves.
I didn't know that.
And the animals absolutely love them. And now that people are beginning to learn
right.
what they are, the restaurants, they take every one I give to them.
Yeah.
Because restaurants serve greens and everything.
Yeah.
Around, and they don't have a big variety.
Mm-hmm.
Those... We experimented with them one time.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't like collards.
I don't like them either, actually, to be honest.
Again, I'm from the Midwest, and I do not like collards.
Okay. Not a big fan of kale either, but...
Oh. And I'm not much a fan of kale either,
yeah.
Okay? So, I had a friend who said, Al, don't you grow collards in your front yard? And I said, yes, because I like them.
Right.
I like to look at them.
Yeah.
And I said, yes. And he said, I want to cook a batch for Thanksgiving at your place, okay? Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll get them.
Yeah.
You'll like them. No, I won't. So, we had Thanksgiving. And there was this dish that I really didn't know what it was, but it had coconut milk and curry in it.
Wow.
And I love coconut milk and
yeah.
I love curry.
Me
and
too.
I just scooped it up. And it was those puppies.
Wow, okay.
And you have to devein them.
Yeah.
Take the vein out, boil them for about 45 minutes, save a little of the juice, of course.
Right.
Then throw in a can of coconut milk and curry powder to your taste.
And it's great.
Mix the flavor with the thing back in if you need it. Put
mm-hmm.
in you can use flour for a thickening. You can use anything that'll mm-hmm. do a little thickening. Nobody will know what they are, and they're delicious.
Yeah.
And I actually eat collards now.
Wow.
That's the only way.
Yeah. That sounds great. I have to try
it's
that.
Wonderful. Yeah. And it was a friend of mine who put it together, not me.
And there's all the kinds of recipes for things that you wouldn't think you can use certain things for, but you can.
It was really an interesting thing. A few years ago, the place was really in production.
Mm-hmm.
All of these beds were working. And I had a group of chefs come through. I had the master chef from Dodger Stadium
mm-hmm.
and his three sous chefs.
Right.
A little restaurant over by the Scientology Center called Square One.
Oh, yeah. That's a great restaurant.
John. I know.
Got
John
it.
And his wife came
yeah.
by. The people from Larchmont Grill.
Okay.
I knew the owners of the Larchmont Grill. And they were in that group. And one more. Oh, Supper Club.
Okay.
The big nightclub there on Hollywood, which
yeah.
is extremely extravagant.
Right.
All four. Everything they did, they tasted.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not used to that. I grow, but I don't taste. They ate everything.
Wow.
So I had to learn... If I was going to talk to chefs, I better know what this stuff tasted like. And I've had to learn to eat many, many things that I did not like, or
yeah.
I probably still don't like.
Right. But you have to get an idea of what it
tastes
like. I have
to know when
like
it's
and
sweet and when it's not and when it's soured. And, you know, don't serve that. Don't send that to those people. That's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Throw it away in the compost pile.
Right.
Don't throw it away.
Yeah, I don't want to throw anything away. You throw it in the compost.
I don't throw anything away.
I want to see the compost operation you have here.
It's called the Taj Mahal of composts.
Oh, my gosh. That's big. It's a 4 or 5 stage compost?
Yes.
Jeez.
Actually, it's more because we have a great deal. Nothing leaves the hill.
Okay.
Well, there's some things that will leave the hill.
Okay.
Thorns, thorny things.
Yeah. Just, the Bermuda
know,
grass.
And certain of grasses. Yeah, we just bag them and throw them out, but... Basically, nothing leaves the thing. And we even, you see all those where we trim and prune?
Right.
Those will be cut up into pieces that are 6 inches long and added to other pieces just like them in the black containers. and we just stack them in there, and every 6 months we pull them out and we take the ones that are decomposed and throw them in over
here.
Oh,
that's a good idea.
And then throw them right back. That way everything that's over there is either a weed or it's been already started.
Okay.
And yes, it's a good thing.
Yeah, you have to have a secondary compost for those big things. That's what I started our garden. We have a pile of stuff that's sort of like the long-term compost.
I started composting at my house in Frogtown.
Really?
Yeah. And I have the 5-gallon buckets.
Right.
And I had a porcelain container. I like them. And that's where the finished one was. Right. So that was stage 3 or 1.
Right.
And then the middle stage of composting. And then the starting stage of composting.
Right.
And I had 2 in the starting stage, 1 in the middle, and 1 in the thing. I now have 3 on the end.
Jeez.
I have 3 in the middle. And I have 5 in the starting. But nothing leaves my property.
Yeah.
So all of the leaves, all of the grasses that everybody puts their little gardeners on to take away stays at my house. And I have more compost than I can use. Right.
Yeah, we have so much compost now. It's like, because I think a lot of people don't realize that they can use that. They don't realize that it's the perfect thing. Yeah.
They'll go to Home Depot and buy mulch to throw in their pathways.
It's ridiculous.
Because it'll kill the weeds.
Yeah.
Of course it will. But why do you rake up the eucalyptus bark then? Because that's what it is, ground up.
Right. Yeah, that stuff has the oil on it.
Leave it here. They don't like it not to look like their backyard.
Yeah.
So that's why I tell them, this is a farm up here. No, no, no. It's not going to look like your backyard.
Yeah.
And down there, we can make it look a little better.
Right.
But up here, no. No, and you need to save everything.
Yeah.
Every plant, everything needs to be ground up and put back in.
Right.
And I add horse manure.
That's good stuff.
I have. Oh, listen.
Heats it up.
Listen, there's so much horse manure generated in the city of L.A. because of all those riders
around the
park.
I didn't think about that.
They are willing to give you anything to take it away.
Yeah.
They'll pay you.
Wow. So you take a bunch of that and you add it to the compost and to the...
I add it very specifically.
Okay.
I have a formula that I use. I'm actually getting ready when I see that this one here that I'm taking over and restarting. When I get my first one that has started here,
right,
makes it down there and is sifted, I'm going to have that tested with the soil labs to see what I'm actually putting in here. Am I doing bad? Am I doing good?
Got it. Good. Is there any other aspects of the garden here that we want to talk about that you want to show me before we wrap it up? Maybe not wrap it up. Will it be like an adjournment of senses, in a sense? We'll just for another time. But
till another time.
Yeah.
No, I think when you come and visit me in the next time, you'll see some real change.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll have kids here.
That'd be great.
All of that stuff that I talk about right now, but it should be starting to take fruition soon.
Well, thanks so much for having me here, Al. This was great talking to you about everything.
That was wonderful.
All right.
I hope your listeners enjoy it.
They will love it. Thanks, Al.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Twisting the Wind. Currently, we're in a to-be-continued status with this interview with the amazing Al Renner. There's more, but for today, this is all. Thank you for listening. Be well, blast out, move onward, stroll across the green earth. It is yours. Take fortune. It favors the brave. Start today like it was supposed to happen, not because you just gotta. Okay?
coat of his. It's so cold.
Are you fucking serious?
Don't you think you're
so
cold?
Now you think so.
I can smell it.
As a branch of the United States government.
As a branch of the United States government, it is the mission of the National Security Agency to assess and flag citizens of the country who may present a threat to its security. The NSA has clearance to wiretap by any means necessary.
Tapped. Incidental recordings of private conversations from the files of the NSA.
Now on feralaudio.com.